Tekla, you started off on a really good point before we hit record. You said you're on your second cup of tea. What is your favorite tea? Like, what is the go-to tea, you know, that's got all the sauce?
Straight up rooibos. Like, I'm not even going to front. Rooibos is the king of teas. And then followed very, very closely by chai.
No ways. A lot of people would say, like, senna tea is, like, right at the top. But when you say rooibos, I cannot disagree with you. I think it is rather good. How many sugars do you take with your tea?
No, straight up, just black. No sugar, no milk. I like to be able to taste the tea. Yeah, 100%.
What?
And I think, like, in a normal day, I'll probably drink, like, between 4 and 6 cups of tea. It's probably not normal, but that's
no
my vibe.
Way. But, like, are you also one of those people that has, like, coffee, like, straight coffee without any sugar or anything, just as it is as well?
So I'm Italian, so it's a birthright to drink espresso just neat, like a single or a double shot, just in the morning. So I grew up with coffee in the morning. And then this obsession with tea only really started about 2.5 years ago when I moved to Joburg. Now I'm back in Cape Town. But when I moved to Joburg, I was like, what is this dependency on coffee that I have? It's very, like, not normal.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get up in the morning, what do? You drink a cup of coffee. And I was convinced that the only way that I could wake up in the morning was if I had a cup of coffee. So then I started substituting coffee for tea, and I actually found that I functioned better in the morning on tea than I did on coffee, which is crazy because the amount of caffeine is so much less. So, you know, it's weird when you get older and you start listening to what your body wants and what it needs. But when I go over to my parents' house, I have to drink coffee. It's just a no-brainer.
So if you had a choice, like if you had to make a decision, right, tea or coffee at this point, I guess tea would pretty much, you know, be like the clear winner.
Oh, 100%. For Christmas, my boyfriend got me this really beautiful tea for one pot and cup mix. It's like a duo. So the bottom is the cup and then the top is the teapot, and it's got the strainer in it.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful. It's got this like really nice, like Moroccan inspired pattern on it. And then he got me a box full of different kinds of tea, which obviously is finished. But I love stuff like that. So definitely tea, hands down.
You know, with one of the points that you said there in the beginning is that, you know, you're Italian and that, you know, you come from an Italian family as well. So I need you to tell me a bit more on that and expand on that. What was it like sort of growing up in an Italian home? You know, how was it for you or your childhood just growing up basically?
Well, it was very loud and there was always a lot of food, always. And my dad worked really, really hard to provide for my mom and I, and to give me a really good life to the point where, like, he was never at home. So it was just my mom and I for majority of when I was growing up. And I remember doing a lot of things with my mother. I grew up in the CBD in Cape Town. So on a Sunday, we would like walk down. Things were very different. Like parks were open. Things didn't have gates on them. Like we lived in this really cool block of flats that were like all the blocks were intertwined. So you could jump over the wall and like I could go visit my friend and, you know, walk down the road to the garden center. Now I actually live down the road from where I grew up. Everything's very fenced off. And like how the geography of Cape Town has changed is super interesting. But my mom was my best friend growing up, and her and I used to duel all the time, movies, The Spur, Chica the Clown, you know, that kind of thing. And I think I remember my home being very loving and very safe. And I had a really great childhood and a really great upbringing. I went to an amazing school. I had some dope friends. So yeah, generally just like very positive. When I look back on those years, I look back on them really, really fondly.
You know, that is, it's very beautiful, and it's actually quite rare as well, you know, basically to find someone who, as you've explained, you know, would look back to the time when they were growing up and have, you know, have the majority of the memories be fond memories. You know, nowadays, you literally anticipate that someone will be like, oh no, you know, I had a hard life. I had a hard time growing up. This and that happened. But it's kind of refreshing, you know, getting a different take to someone who, you know, had it sort of a lot better than most would then probably expect or have come to expect, you know, today's times type thing. So with you having had, you know, as you explained, your father worked super hard, you know, to provide for you and your mom. And with the work that you've done now, you know, with the entities that you've built up, you know, namely Text in the City, you know, Text Talks and all that there. As someone who has got those platforms that are like super established and are well known, you know, I don't suppose the journey to that would have been as easy as it was growing up. You know, would you say those sort of coming, you know, into being the entities that they are today was a smooth journey or as smooth a journey as, you know, your childhood? Or would you say that it was a lot difficult getting something, you know, from the ground up? I don't know if my question makes sense.
Your question makes 100% sense, you know, and I think that looking at my father essentially working for himself and how much he enjoyed that. So my dad is a tour guide and he travels all over the country. And when I was younger, he used to go to other countries as well. He doesn't do that anymore. He's Italian, but was actually born in Venezuela, which is a whole nother story. In fact, a whole nother podcast. But to have a look at somebody who is not South African, was not born here, but who loves the country so much and who loves what he does so much, that was incredibly inspiring for me from a very young age. And when I got to matric, everybody knew what they wanted to do. You know, a lot of the girls who were in my class were going like straight into varsity. And I had absolutely no idea what it was that I wanted to do, but I knew that I was not going to work for a boss. Like that was always my thing. I had this inherent feeling that whatever I was going to do, it was going to be mine and I was going to be my own boss. So I took a year off and that turned into 2 years. But I started working at Zula Soundbar, RIP, in Cape Town. And I started working there as a bartender and that was my in into the industry. And a lot of the people that I still work with today, I met their managers, musicians, PR agents, writers, photographers, and Zula was really my in into the industry. And then it was only when I went to UCT and in my first year at UCT that I really honed the skill that I had for writing. So I was always very good at English and creative writing in school. And then it was my second year off and there was something that was missing. And I remember having a conversation with my mother and I said to her, like, I love working at Zula, but I don't want to be a bartender for the rest of my life. There's some people, you know, who go become professional bartenders and like, that's amazing, but that's just not my vibe. It's just not what I want to do. And I don't know what's missing. And she was like, I know what's missing. You need to, you know, further your education and broaden your mind. And going to UCT was really the turning point for me. And Text in the City specifically started as just a blog spot where I would write my daily ramblings. I think my first post was about my friend who was Irish and it was St. Patrick's Day and he always used to dress up like a leprechaun. And I wrote this post that basically said, if you see this crazy man just like a leprechaun running around the street, it's probably him. And then the next day he messaged me and he was like, I'm blaming this hangover on you because people read your post and saw me and everybody bought me drinks and now I'm dying. So so that's when I realized that, you know, there was something there. And it was interesting because when Text in the City became a thing, Instagram wasn't even live yet. I don't even know if it had been thought up. Like Facebook was in its infancy. Social media was in its infancy. So all of the websites, the entertainment websites that started around the same time as Text in the City, My City by Night, Don't Party, We Are Awesome, we all st- started on the same footing. And I don't know if like Sex and the City had started like right now, if I would be able to cut through all the noise and all the competition that's out there. I think that having started at the right place at the right time has given me a leg up. And then I've just had to, you know, be consistent over the years and make sure that I'm staying true to my audience while also adapting to the time. So that's been really hard. When I started Sex and the City like 10 odd years ago, the scene was a totally different place. Like Five and Fame was playing rock music. M Car was still alive. And now, I mean, you look at, you know, the dominant TV channels or music channels and what they're playing, and like, you know, it's on a piano, it's cool, it's house, it's hip hop to a certain extent. The scene has totally changed. And I had to, without sounding dramatic, I had to adapt or die. So the way that Tips in the City's focus has changed is I now spotlight independent and underground musicians and unsigned musicians as well, regardless of the genre, because I really feel like the scene has changed so much and there's no longer a place for something, for a Tex in the City that was as niche as it was when I started. And I'm very, very glad that I made that decision because it allowed for the site to expand and to flourish.
Mm. You mentioned some really like some key points there, you know, right place, right time, consistency, you know, spotlighting, you know, the underground, unsigned, indie artist types. But we're definitely still going to touch a lot more on that. I want to pass it over to Meegs for the time being.
I want to ask, what to you makes an underground musician? Like, where is that sort of cap where they go from being emergent to mainstream?
Well, I think the obvious one would be if they signed to a label. But nowadays, you don't necessarily need to sign to a label to be successful. And there's so many different aggregators out there, TuneCore, DistroKid, Artists Without a Label, where musicians can make a success of themselves without signing a 180 deal or a 360 deal or whatever it is. But for me, I think that when an artist starts to make a decent living off not only their gigs and their events, but also their endorsements and their merch, and they become established and they become a well-known face and figure, that for me is when they're in the mainstream. I look at somebody like Dee Koala, who I've been working a lot with recently. I interviewed her on Tech Talks. And I had her as a guest on a panelist that I did for a hotel that opened up this week. And she went from just being a everyday Kailicha rapper, you know, with ambitions and goals and aspirations. And now she's an Adidas ambassador and she's modeling for Beyonce's new Ivy Park range. So that, for me, that's 100% mainstream. Even though her music might not necessarily be played on a Channel O or a Trace, like her music videos, not yet anyway, I do consider her to be quite a well-known figure. And then, you know, also when they start winning awards as well, that's when they start getting recognized by their peers. And I think that our indie scene needs a lot of help in that regard because mainstream media doesn't support them like that anymore. So they need entities like a Tex in the City, which is why I wish they were more, to help elevate them in their goal to get to the mainstream. Because that is everybody's goal at the end of the day, if you are a musician, you know, to make a decent living out of what it is that you do.
Mm. Is your partnership with TuneCore one of those sort of efforts that you're going for in terms of like, you don't need a label if you're an unsigned, you're an independent artist, you can do this in terms of getting your music uploaded in the first place? Is that one of the branches that you're trying to support them through?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. And I'm so happy that you mentioned TuneCore as well, because Jade Leaf, who is the manager for Sub-Saharan Africa, TuneCore, I've known her for ages. And she was one of the senior label managers at Sony Music Entertainment. And then she left and she went to Mnet, and now she's working for TuneCore. And she really is, she comes from a music background. She's passionate about musicians. And together with Tex in the City, TuneCore wants to help give musicians a leg up. Their biggest artist on their roster is Spoegwolf. And I think that, you know, because Spoegwolf are the biggest Afrikaans band in the country at the moment, I think people sometimes forget that they're independent. Like, they've released 4 albums and every album has gone number one on Apple Music. And they work in partnership with TuneCore, and TuneCore provides them a level of digital support that not a lot of independent artists get. I think that a lot of musicians, because the educational tools aren't available to them, like, they don't know something very simple like putting together an EPK or how to actually upload your different singles to an aggregator for a pre-order, which I think is very important. And TuneCore has all of those educational tools available for the musicians to access, to download and to read, to better educate themselves, which I think is amazing. So yeah, so we did a series with TuneCore that lives on the site under our main menu, that links to all of those tools. Basically saying that, like, you know, don't get discouraged. You can do this on your own.
Mm.
Is TuneCore a local entity, or is it just sort of local friendly, if you get what I mean?
It is an international company.
Okay.
That now has local representation, which I think is very important. So if you are a musician and you're working with an aggregator, and that aggregator, the person who you're talking to is based in London or is based in Dubai or is based in LA or in a place where there's a time zone difference, and you wake up on a Friday morning and your single's supposed to go live and it's not there, and there's a problem with your aggregator, and now you've got to contact them, but they might only get back to you in 2-3 hours. It's very frustrating. And I've worked with a lot of artists where this has happened. So I think that any kind of aggregator having a local team and local support, where you can pick up the phone and call them, or if you have a working relationship with them, you can WhatsApp them, so you can make sure that the implementation of your release is 100% sorted before anything goes out.
I agree. I think it's so important to have something, have a local perspective, because most of, like you were saying, most of the resources we have access to if we're an independent musician are from a UK perspective, or it's an American person telling us what to do.
Yeah.
And then you sign up for a service that is essentially operating in dollars. And then they have things like, if you want to do a cover and you want to do it officially, they really make it difficult for you to actually access anything that they offer, because it's not like South African friendly in a way. So that's a top rank move there for TuneCore.
Yeah, it's very smart. Super smart.
The way you've described Tex and the City in terms of it being the right place, the right time, it's really great to see how, like, it was there just as the scene was kind of bursting in terms of the local music. And Tex was one of the things that says, go here, this is happening. And, like, it's, you know, a drive away. It's not talking about someone you'll never actually see perform. So I think it was really one of, like, the helpful things in terms of, if you want to discover local music, this is where you go. Was that part of your intention? I know you said you started it as more of a blog, but, like, when did you transfer over to music and entertainment?
Yeah, so I started writing for a free street press music publication called Your LMG, RIP. And that came out monthly. And people really started to enjoy the pieces that I would write. And what I was writing at the time was mainly gig reviews. And a lot of the feedback that I got was, why wait for the magazine to come out once a month? Why not use your blog and use this platform that you've started and go more music-centric? So at the time, I was like, okay, cool. Well, now I can use it to fund Zula gigs. And, you know, I'm working here, so it makes sense. And then there was a whole lot more going on. And I started interviewing bands. And it was always very Cape Town focused. And it became more Joburg focused and more Durban focused very gradually. As other websites started to, you know, they started to close up shop. And I think that the reason that we're still here all these years later is because we were never, or I was never driven by money or commercial success. I was always driven by my passion for music and for the musicians and for the local scene. And I only wanted it to grow and I only wanted it to thrive. And, you know, later when the partnership started to come and when the money started to come, it was an added extra, it was a bonus. But I think that because Tech in the City was founded on passion for music, it's still here. That's the main reason why.
You know, the one thing that I feel like I appreciate is that Tex as a platform, you even mentioned it yourself that, you know, it started being more Joburg focused. And the epic part about that is that as much as you were based in Cape Town, you're still able to cater, you know, for the audiences that are out in Joburg, people that are out in Durban and other places as well, which is just where I feel like a lot of people aren't really doing. Like you'll find platforms just focusing on one area or the specific area mm-hmm. where they're based from. You know, just looking at combining that with the fact that your platform is set up to help, you know, those independent artists and such. You know, if I'm an independent artist based, say, for example, in Johannesburg, and I'm wanting to get featured on Tex, right, on Tex in the City, mm-hmm. Or even Tex Talks, what's the criteria? Like, what do you guys look at before even deciding, okay, well, this indie artist here deserves, you know, a feature, or this person doesn't? You know, what do you guys sort of nitpick or sort of look at in order to basically come to a decision as to who features and who doesn't?
I think it's a very basic criteria. It's just got to be good. And if you go to our Facebook page and you go to our Instagram account, you'll see that on Instagram, it's the highlighted story, and Facebook, it's the pinned page. And there are step-by-step details with how to submit a single, a video, and an EP, and what you need to send along with that in order to be considered for a feature or a review.
Mm.
We get between 40 and, let's say, 55 emails a day. So the scene is alive and well. So when people tell me that, you know, the scene is stagnant or the scene is dying, I'm like, no, it's not. It really is not. You should just see my inbox. We've started to get emails from other African countries as well, which I think is incredible. Namibia, Botswana, Kenya, Mozambique, Lesotho. And I think that if somebody has taken the time to put an email together and send it to me, the least I can do is take the time to read that email and listen to that link. So it's very time consuming. And sometimes I don't listen to the whole track, but I do read every email and I do reply to every email because I think that it's important. Sometimes I don't give feedback. Sometimes I just say, listen, unfortunately, you know, we've chosen not to feature your single this time around, but, you know, please keep myself and my video and reviews editor in the loop and we will get back to you. Sometimes musicians come back and they're like, okay, why have you not chosen to feature it? And then I'll say, listen, I think that you can improve upon X, or that Y can change. And if they want feedback, I'll give it to them. And 9 times out of 10, they come back with another release, which I think is great. Because obviously we can't feature everything. And there is a sort of standard of quality that I'd like to set for the things that we review. I use the word blessed really lightly, that there are so many different kinds of musicians who make so many different kinds of music who are contacting us to feature their work. It just, I mean, to me, it shows the reach And that's a testament to the work that we do. I'm really proud of that.
But Tekla, when you say it needs to, the initial thing that you said was it needs to be good. Can we agree that, you know, taste is very subjective? In that case, would you not, like, when someone sends through an email, does it need to be good just to Tekla? Or is there like a team maybe where you sort of like listen to something and then you sort of delegate and be like, okay, guys, 5 of you, Mark, Jacques, Sipo, whoever, listen to this. If you guys like it, I like it. But let me know what you guys think. And then they come back to you and they're like, say maybe 3 out of 5 say, okay, it's dope. And then that's how you come to the decision. Or is it strictly just whatever is good to Tekla?
This is such a great question. And no one has ever asked me this before. There are 3 of us. So if it was just me, I'm going to be very honest right now. Like, I've become very cynical over the years. So I think that if it was just me, we'd be featuring like 1 or 2 things a week. But my team are great. They're like, no, listen to this again. And like, this part of it's really cool. And I'm like, okay, fine. But it's me behind every reply to the email. So we'll sit and we'll pull everything and then we'll talk about it. We'll talk about the videos. Because sometimes, you know, a song is really good, but the video is like super cut. And I understand how in this day and age, like in this economy, independent musicians don't necessarily have a big budget to put together like a sick music video. So, you know, we've opened things up to like lyric videos and performance videos. And it got to the point where Sky Malik, who's my video and reviews editor, I think around about August, September last year, she messaged me and she was like, if I have to see 1 more lockdown video, I'm actually just going to have a nervous breakdown. Because everything was the same. It was like people in their bedroom or their bathroom or like, you know, keep a positive outlook despite what's happening around us. And it got a bit tiring. So I felt for her in that regard because she was going through a lot of the same sort of content. But I would never be able to do this by myself. This is a team effort. And I think that once I realized that I had to let go of the reins and I had to start trusting my team more, that's also when Technocity took a step up. Because, you know, I can't do this by myself. And it's something that I still deal with on a day-to-day basis. I'm still learning how to trust new members of my team. So it's a daily struggle. But yeah, to answer your question, there's no way that I can do this by myself.
That was very well said. That was a very beautiful answer. And, you know, it's got a lot of insights and I think help even for anyone who might be listening to this and wanting to maybe start something similar to Text in the City, in that it would be very difficult to pull it off, you know, alone. And as you said, you're also still learning, you know, for as long as you've been doing this. So there are some very awesome, awesome points from the answer that you just gave. So that was a really good one.
I think slowly but surely things are starting to open up. I've actually got an event that I have to go to today in Stellenbosch at the Daisy Jones Bar. Not 1 show, but 2. So there's an afternoon show, a matinee show, and then there's an evening show. 50 packs, Dan Patlansky and Hugo Felton, and both of them are sold out. And I think that speaks volumes in terms of how much people are craving to get in front of a stage and to watch live music. So I think that, well, I hope, fingers crossed, that once we have some sort of herd immunity or most of us are vaccinated or, you know, the coronavirus disappears, which I don't think it will. I think we're going to have to live with it for a while. We're going to see our own version of like the roaring 20s, you know, where people just go mad.
You brought up a really interesting point there with the vaccine. Mm-hmm. You know, which side of the fence are you on with that one?
Oh, I am 150,000% pro-vaccine. I was looking at the stats this morning, and I actually told my boyfriend that not one person who has been vaccinated in South Africa has died. So to me, I trust the scientists, I trust the doctors, I trust people who are smarter than me, people who have been trained in their field, who are experts. And if they tell me that the vaccine is safe for me, if my doctor tells me it's safe for me, then it's safe for me. I mean, you get somebody like my mother who is on chronic medication, and she did a lot of research into what vaccine would be best for her to take, which one, if any, would react with her chronic medication. And the one that she got, which was the two dose, which is Pfizer, that was the best one for her. So I really feel like just making an outright blanket statement that you don't want to get vaccinated, just purely because I don't think that that's very smart. I do, however, feel that you have the right to do whatever you want with your body, but just don't make silly claims that the vaccine will do X, Y, and Z to you when it won't. You know what I mean?
That is well said. It's really good to know when you find that someone, you know, who has a lot of influence is able to come out and say, you know what, you know, just get it done type thing. I think it would put a lot of people at ease, you know, who have maybe been contemplating as well. So yeah, shout out for that. Meeks?
Tex, as someone who has been speaking to a variety of musicians over the last 2 years and even before, what is something that you've noticed in terms of maybe a mindset shift or any sort of change that you could recognize as like a pattern that we've gone through as a scene together?
I think that a lot of people are severely depressed and they don't know how to deal with that. And they don't know how to talk about it. Especially when lockdown was at its height and we were all separated from each other and people were isolated. I think now musicians are willing to talk more about the struggles that they've been through. I had a recent conversation with my Josie, and I know that this is something that he wouldn't mind me sharing with people because he said it quite publicly on a panel that I was involved in this week. He said that, you know, he's been in therapy and he's been struggling really hard. And I think that when your entire income stream and social stream gets just totally taken away from you overnight, I don't think we're really going to know the long-term effects on how that has affected our industry's psyche until maybe 10, 15 years down the line. There's an incredible documentary that DJ and producer Aiden Kay put together called State of the Arts. And because he's in the electronic music scene, he focused primarily and interviewed primarily DJs. And there were just a few stories that those DJs shared about how lockdown had affected their whole lives. And it's just some truly heartbreaking stories. And then, you know, you look at our government having the resources to help, but actually really not giving a fuck. And like the money going missing and all the corruption happening. And it just makes me very, pessimistic. And I'm generally a pretty optimistic person, especially when it comes to our music scene and our entertainment scene. And I don't like feeling the way that I feel currently about South Africa. I just don't like it because I'm very patriotic and I love my country. But when the people who are supposed to be looking after us and looking out for us and having our backs don't, it makes me like really angry and also like really depressed, because how is the situation going to get better, you know?
We'll be right back.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game. Yeah. Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there. We all artists, man. You feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it, take that shit serious.
Is that related in any way to the cynicism you said you were feeling towards the music scene? You know, like maybe you're feeling this sort of way and you're wanting musicians to respond to it in their music. And like you said, you were getting a bit tired of people doing lockdown videos and saying, it's going to be fine, guys. Like, it's okay. Just keep your head up. And you were like, I'm not feeling that. You know, music typically is a catharsis to what the culture is experiencing right now. Is that maybe like part of it, or am I completely off?
I think that you're definitely right. I think that plays a huge part in my feeling of cynicism. I think that, you know, when you listen to music all day, every day, when I come home, or in the case of when I'm working at home and just, you know, at home all the time during lockdown, the last thing I want to do when I come home is listen to music. If I do put on something, it'll usually be something without lyrics. It'll be a jazz album, or it'll be a classical album, or it'll be something ambient, you know, where my mind can totally zone out. And I think that a lot of the cynicism that I feel as well, I draw from seeing some musicians, no names mentioned, who have become quite prominent. And I don't necessarily understand why. When I look at the independent scene and how much quality there is and how much hustle there is and how much heart there is, and X person has become quote unquote famous or noteworthy by just following a formula. So I think my frustration comes from the musicians that I deal with on a day-to-day basis struggling the way that they do. And then also, you know, in part having to listen to 50 of the same lockdown songs. But that was more last year than this year. I think this year, slowly but surely, with things opening up, I'm starting to see on an international level as well, not only on a local level, I'm starting to see a lot of lockdown influenced albums, but like quite deep, quite emotional things. So I think that the art that was born in lockdown, that's coming out now, that's been a bit more refined, I think that is the stuff that's really going to like set our musicians apart in terms of what was being released in lockdown and just churned out because they felt like they needed to, because, you know, maybe we were all in this together and they wanted to foster some sort of community spirit. But I think that the stuff that's coming out now that's been looked at and worked on, that's where the real quality is.
With what you just said there, Tekla, you know, it sort of brings me to, you know, what you've basically, or something that has come after Tex and the City, which is basically Tex Talks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've made quite an impact, you know, with that, because, I mean, right off the bat, you know, the guests that you have on your show are incredible. You know, these are people who are already established artists and all that there. And, you know, how did that sort of come about? How did you, or when rather did you decide, hey, let me try out this whole podcasting thing? Because even with, you know, to someone who listens to it, you wouldn't think, considering that, you know, you come from a background of writing, you know,
mm-hmm.
you execute this so well and you're so well spoken and the things that you ask and stuff, you know, you would not expect that someone who comes from a writing background would have executed something like this so like as well as you did. So is there any sort of history, you know, when it comes to doing sort of verbal interviews like that there, like you do on Text Talks, you know, how did that come about? Why did you decide to start it and all that?
Firstly, thank you. That's a really lovely compliment. I think that I realized quite early on from when I was interviewing musicians for the website that my strength lay in when I was opposite somebody, talking to them, interacting with them, seeing their facial expressions, and really being able to strike up a connection with them. So that I noticed I had a pretty good knack for quite early on when I started Text in the City. And then when it comes to Text Talk, I mean, I had a few people like bugging me, like, why do you not have a podcast? Why do you not have a podcast? I was like, I'm so busy doing 101 things on any given day. Like now I need to add another thing to that list. And like, sure, you know, now, and then I've got to find a producer and then an editor. I guess I could do it all myself, but I don't have time. And then a friend of mine, we had a day drinking session. We had two, one at Royal in Joburg and one at Van Hunks in Cape Town. And those two day drinking sessions were how Text Talks was born. And he said, you need a podcast. I want to produce it for you. I'll bring in an editor who will, you know, put in all the effects and make it sound as slick as it does. Let's record 6 episodes, do a first season, and then let's see. And again, like it was with Text in the City, Text Talk was the right place. It was the right time. We recorded the season one. We recorded it in studio, face-to-face, at the end of 2019. And then we released it as we went into the first lockdown. And, I mean, we had no idea. We had slated it for release then, and we had no idea that everybody was going to be at home, behind their computers, looking for something to do, looking for something to stream. And then, you know, we went number one on Apple Podcasts, and it was amazing. And again, you know, right place, right time, quality product. Would it have been as successful if we hadn't gone into our first lockdown? I don't know. It, you know, it just kind of worked out that way. And because we are very new to the podcasting game, I mean, before my producer Jono roped me into this, I knew nothing about podcasts. So you know, I had to go and research and educate myself. And you know, podcasting is in its infancy and in South Africa. And now that we are in our 6th season, we're recording our 7th season. I mean, we're still learning. We're still kind of, you know, figuring things out along the way. And I, again, like with Text in the City, it takes a village. Like, I would never have been able to do this by myself. There's absolutely no way. And I put my trust of my brand into the hands of my team, and they amplified that. And I'm very, Text Talks is like my baby. It's like my child. I like just watching it grow from season to season. And it's crazy because I would have never thought that I'd be interviewing people like the Lumineers or Passenger or, you know, Portugal the Man. And it's crazy stuff. And I think that I'm very happy that podcasting has become the medium that it's become, because what I've seen over the last few years, which is really sad, is that the time that people spend reading articles on Text in the City every year gets less and less and less, because people's attention spans have started to wane because of how we ingest social media and videos and TikToks and reels and things like that. So people don't have the time, or they think that they don't have the time to sit down and read a 3,000-word piece or feature on a band or whatever. That culture has gone out the window, and it's very sad. So I've had to adapt my written pieces on Text in the City to suit those shorter time bands. But what I find very interesting is people will gladly sit and listen to a 1.5-hour podcast. Or maybe they're not sitting. Maybe it's on in the background. You know, maybe they're making dinner. Maybe because podcasting is a medium where you can do something else while you listen, it's easily digestible and it's becoming more popular. You cannot read a 3,000 word piece and do something else at the same time. Your attention needs to be solely focused on that piece that you're reading. So again, it's been very interesting to move with the times and to adapt and to see how things change. I'm pretty sure that 5 years from now, there's going to be something else. There's going to be a new medium. There's going to be a new social media platform. And that's one of the things that I love a lot about the industry that I'm in, is that it's ever changing. It's not boring. It's not stagnant at all. And it's always something new.
Now, just looking at that key point before I pass on to Meeks, a key point that you said there is that, you know, readership and people that, you know, go on the pace to read, to do some reading, you know, is sort of getting less and less each year. Does that kind of mean that there might be this shift when we're looking at the text brand as a whole, a shift maybe from being a blog where, you know, someone would go on and read, and maybe have all the focus now be on the podcast, and perhaps have maybe the blog be sort of like the side content, looking at the fact that, you know, with each year, you know, less and less people are reading and are more inclined to sort of listen. So would you say that is maybe the direction that you might take in terms of making podcasts the main sort of source of content that we get from, you know, text talks or text in the city?
It's very interesting that you mentioned that, because we just actually started a new podcast called Text Talks Extra, because our guests are booked out until February 2022. So because we plan so far in advance, there are things that crop up on the side, very exciting things that we needed another platform to be able to host. So Text Talks Extra is a very short 15-minute like snapshot into what X musician is doing, what they're releasing, which is very exciting. But I don't think at the moment I would want to turn Text in the City into a wholly podcasting platform, or into a space where you only get your news from podcasting. I feel like maybe we're headed in that direction, and maybe in a few years I'll have to relook at that. But I think at the moment, the written word is still really important, and people still like watching videos and, you know, being able to like directly click up and go and stream an album or an EP or whatever. So I do feel like at the moment, the base of what makes Text in the City's content is super relevant. However, long form seems to be falling by the wayside, but, you know, keep an eye on it. You never know, like things are super fluid in this industry. So there might be something else that might come along, and I might want to jump on that. You never know.
Beautiful. I, for one, just wish you all the best with anything that you do moving forward, fam. Like, honestly, so hardworking and stuff. But now I am diving into things that we say when we usually close out the show. So Meeks, on to you.
I would like to talk about a song, and it's a song that pops into my head out of absolutely nowhere at any hour. It lives rent-free in my head, and I need to know who composed it.
Okay.
It's the Text Talks jingle. Who made that, and why is it in my brain all the time?
Oh, I love that it's in your brain all the time. My producer is going to be so stoked. So Matthew Lewis was an incredible musician in his own right. And Al Clapper, who also is an amazing jazz musician and is the lead singer of a band called Andrew Genius. The two of them composed that intro. And if you think that lives in your head rent-free, please go and listen to the remixed version of the theme tune for Text Talks Extra. It's incredible. It's like a bit funkier. That lives currently in my head rent-free.
No way, there's more. That's amazing. Because it's so loopable.
Yeah.
But it's such like, yeah, it's so grounding. Oh, it just pops up. It's amazing. Okay, so Matthew,
I love that.
Thank you. I will listen to the remix. Where can I find this?
You can find Text Talks Extra on every podcasting platform. So Spotify, Apple Music, Google Pods, on Techno City as well under the Tech Talk tab. It's right there.
Nice.
You're going to love it.
Very nice. Before we start closing out and everything, I really, really would like to know this from you, because you, in terms of not only reviews and writing, you've also done events. I mean, like, you've just been in almost every corner of the industry, and it's really amazing. In terms of festivals, whenever they make a comeback, is there like maybe a top three or a top five that would be on your fantasy festival lineup? Like, if you could book anyone.
Oh, wow. What a great question. Dead? Alive?
Either.
Okay. Let's do living. So Frank Ocean, because I think that he's such a great communicator of the human condition. He's a total musical genius. And I've never seen him live, and I've always wanted to, so bucket list. My Chemical Romance, because also my boyfriend scoffing in the background is like, oh, don't like them. They're one of, Welcome to the Black Parade album for me is one of the best concept albums that I've ever heard. And the way that they put it together, the way that they put that narrative together with the visual and the videos, makes them, in my book, one of the best bands of all time. And I know that even though they're a bit older, they still bring that punk energy and that fire. So I'd love to see them live. And then this is a very, very selfish top three. And then my third one, okay, actually, we have to go dead, would be Amy Winehouse, purely because her music and her lyrics are transcendent. I think that her story is so tragic, and in the wake of, you know, what happened to her, her music hits a bit differently, but she paves the way for artists like Adele and like Ellie Goulding and Duffy, shame who disappeared. But I mean, Amy Winehouse is just an absolute legend. I think those would be my three. Very different, super different, but that's my vibe. I don't discriminate on the genre spectrum.
Wow. Okay. So Frank Ocean, My Chem, and Amy Winehouse. What do we call this festival? Like Cryfest? We need to find a way to make this happen, because, you know, they're all pretty, everyone's got to wear black, like, you know, we're all going to be willing to just feel feels in various genres. It's going to be a journey.
At every bar, they're just like tissue stations and
wine everywhere, oceans of wine.
Oceans of wine, just everywhere. Oh my gosh. But yeah, there's so many. I'm really loving James Blake at the moment as well. I'm loving the new stuff that he's putting out in the wake of his new album dropping. Mm. And also, James Blake is very in his field too. So if we have to add him to the lineup, definitely an ocean of wine available everywhere at every station.
Oh, do you know Puma Blue?
No, I don't actually.
Okay, new one for you. It's another person having a cry, but like in a very melodic, wonderful way.
I love having a good melodic cry. Okay, so Puma Blue.
Puma
I'm writing
Blue. Down. Yes. Puma. It's a nighttime okay. Listen, an evening listen. Yes.
Okay, great. Now I know what I'm doing tonight.
Okay, cool. Let me know.
I will.
Before we let you go, text locally, you know, your top three in the local scene.
Ooh. Okay, so Internet Girl. I think that they're really great. I think that they're a good example of a band who is doing all of the right things in terms of marketing themselves online. A lot of people don't know that they're South African. A lot of their fans think that they're international, and I love that. And I think, yeah, the music that they're making is so on trend. But even if, you know, this pop punk resurgence wasn't happening, I think that they would still find their way to do great things. So then I would say, sure, there's so many. There's a guy by the name of Delon John. He hasn't put out anything in a really long time, but he submitted two singles to Tex in the City. And I'm telling you, this guy is making pop music that is on the level of like Biebs and Selena Gomez and Olivia Rodrigo. Like that's the level of talent that this guy has. I mean, he's sitting on all of this music, and I just hope that he releases it with a good succinct plan behind it soon. But I sent the one single. So one of the things that I do is I work freelance for Apple Music, and I sent the single to my homies at Apple Music, and they were like, this is incredible. And they got playlisted on a global pop playlist. And this was like a guy's like first or second single. And I said to him, like, Delon, if you get a proper team behind you, if you could be like a gigantic global international pop star. I know that he had a really, really rough time during lockdown, and he had to go back to the drawing board in terms of pulling himself towards himself to release his new music. So if he's listening to this, Delon, I wish you all the best, and I hope that you just release all those tunes. Oh my God, it's like on an absolute like epic mound of music. And then three, there's a girl by the name of Anka Richards. There's nothing about her in the press. Her single was sent to me via Boa Bosch, who was like, this chick is from Poch. Listen to this song. It's got like 100,000 streams on Spotify. She's incredible. Listen to that. Went back and listened to her other stuff. And one of my writers interviewed her. She's busy with a producer on an EP that's coming out. She's also got an incredible voice. She's 18 years old. And she's someone to look out for. So those would be my three.
No, that is perfect. You know, a lot of the people that you mentioned as well, I think it's really dope that, you know, it wasn't exactly anyone who would be, you know, in the mainstream, which is, I think, is testament to your vibe and what you're doing with your platform. So, yeah, with that being said, Tex, we really appreciate you being on the show. We can't thank you enough. This was a really awesome experience having you on the show. I, for one, learned a lot, you know, about you and from you as well. And I just really hope that with everything that you do, you know, from here onwards, just continues to just kill and continue to just rise to whole new levels. So thank you so much for joining us, Tekla. Really appreciate it.
And thank you so much for having me. This was an absolute pleasure to do. And I hope that you guys invite me back.
Yeah, 100%.
whenever you need like a filler, or you just want to have like a cool convo or whatever, I'll come here. I'll make a gallon of tea before, and we can just shoot the shit.
Yes.
This is your home, fam. This is your home. So we welcome anytime.
Yay, shout out Pledge.
Shout out. Listen, what are your handles? You know, if people want to get in touch with you, if people want to, you know, connect, where do they find you?
You can find me at Tex in the City, 2 X's across all platforms, and at Tex Talk, also 2 X's across all platforms.
Dope. And obviously, if you want to catch Sludge Underground, it's just at Sludge Underground on every platform except Twitter. It's at Sludge031. And yeah, the stuff goes up on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. We Sludge Underground Podcast. And yo, guys, we've had Tex join us on the show today. Really glad and really grateful that she was on. And yeah, guys, thank you so much for tuning into the episode. We hope that you continue to be with us for the next episode as well. So yeah, until next time, from myself and Megan, it's bye for now.
Thank you.